Americans support Donald Trump's immigration executive order approach than oppose it. But the margin is close, and U.S. Senator Al Franken of Minnesota has been an outspoken critic of the ban and says,
I agree with Senator McCain and Senator Lindsey Graham that this doesn't help our security at all. In fact, it just provides propaganda for jihadists. I think it puts us more at risk.
Since Trump signed the immigration order, there have been several high-profile protests across the country, including here in Minnesota. And earlier this week, the state attorney general joined a lawsuit alleging the order is unconstitutional. Governor Mark Dayton wants Minnesota to set a goal of improving water quality in its lakes and rivers 25% by 2025. A story in the Star Tribune states the man who was involved in a head-on crash that killed a mother of three children Tuesday night in Foley was driving a stolen vehicle. This is MNN.
Yeah, you. It's me, your heart. Listen to me. We've got to talk. High blood pressure is serious, and yours? Whoa. What happened to us? We used to be so much more active. But lately, you've been ignoring me. I know you think I'm just going to keep ticking away forever, but you're wrong. You can do so much more to control your high blood pressure. Doing the minimum isn't doing enough. I'm under a lot of pressure and can quit whenever I want. Bet you didn't know that. But I like my job. Just treat me better. Check on me. Give me something green to nibble on every once in a while. And maybe we can do some exercise on occasion. Let's get to it. After all, we're in this together.
Listen to your heart. Don't let it quit on you. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. Find out how at heart.org/bloodpressure. Check, change, control. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and
Computer Repair and Services is well known for simple pricing and excellent customer service. That's one of the reasons we are the oldest computer repair business in the area. Computers are the specialty, but they also repair tablets and phones like iPhones and Nooks. That's right, Computer Repair and Services is your one stop for technology. If it's not repairable, it can be recycled for free. Computer Repair and Services, located on Highway 5 in Stillwater. Click with confidence and call 439-7544. That's 651-439-7544.
Did you know Wolf Beer has a brewing history that stretches back to the 1860s? Did you also know that Wolf Brewing Company has a baseball heritage as well? Yep, it's true. In fact, in the early 1900s, the Wolf Brewing Company fielded a team that would regularly beat teams from the Minneapolis and St. Paul area. And while fans were watching great baseball, they would ask for Wolfs. So when you're listening to great baseball, do the same. Ask for Wolfs, Stillwater's original craft beer. Wolf Brewing Company, Stillwater, Minnesota.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat. I would flip-flop all night long. I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed. It's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose.
And for a limited time, get the KLBB 4-pack special. You'll get 2 MyPillow premium pillows and 2 Go Anywhere MyPillows for 40% off the regular price. Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-313-8659 and use promo code KLBB for the KLBB 4-pack special.
At the Stan Turner Show, we love good stories, and there's no better place to find them than Valley Bookseller in downtown Stillwater. Valley Bookseller is an independent bookstore with knowledgeable and friendly staff who love books. Tell them what you like to read, and they'll make terrific recommendations just for you. Also, discover one of the finest children's collections in the entire Twin Cities. Valley Bookseller. Great books, great people. 217 North Main in Stillwater. Online at valleybookseller.com.
Cloudy skies expected today with highs around 31. South winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Cloudy skies again tonight, lows around 18. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times. Tomorrow, highs level off around 23. Temperatures a bit above average Monday and Tuesday with highs in the low 30s. Chance for snow Tuesday. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki on Club 1220 KLBB, where your music and memories live. Right now, 29.
Thank you.
I would call that a perky weather forecaster. What a wonderful voice and delivery with fairly good news for early February. 29 degrees already. That's 1 degree better than our predicted high for the day. So we're off to a good start here. Good afternoon. Good Saturday afternoon to you all. Stan Turner here. So nice to have your company. We always have the company here of Jesse, our able-bodied producer and engineer here who works magic in our control room. Good morning and good afternoon, Mr. Magic. How you doing?
Wonderful, although I wasn't here last week.
No, you weren't. No, Angela stood in for you.
Yeah,
where
I was...
you? I know where you were last week. Tell our listeners.
I was jumping in a lake.
Somebody told you to go jump in a lake and you did. You better quickly tell us why you jumped in a lake on that frigid day.
Well, of course, KLBB jumped for... the Polar Plunge to support the Special Olympics of Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. And you were among those who went in the water, and that generated money for that wonderful cause. Many of our staffers did take the plunge, too. We thank them all. I would have been there, but I was shackled to this desk, forced to do this program. Against my will. I was warm, high, and dry, and you folks were doing good work. So thanks again, Jess, and to all of our colleagues here at the radio station. Speaking of the weather here, you heard Jennifer Wachiski, I think that's the way she pronounced her name. We might have some weather to contend with come Tuesday, a mix of that dreaded mix of drizzle, freezing drizzle, rain and snow. If we have time during the hour here, we'll go over that. But I'm not seeing anything, nothing so far, about any significant accumulation. Let's get to the main event here. It's 12:07 right now, and as you heard there, 29 degrees in the Twin Cities. Let's go back, Jess. Let's go back a moment in history here in the Twin Cities. December 9th, 1968. That was a Monday. 2:15 in the afternoon, so 49 years ago, December 9th, 1968. That moment saw lots of fanfare and dignitaries on a stretch of concrete, of all things, where the boundaries of Minneapolis and St. Paul meet. That's around Highway 280, those of you who know the geography around here. The big day on that December day back in 68 was marked with a special ribbon ceremony. Now, Jesse, not the usual ribbon cutting. This was a ribbon tying. Ever heard of that before?
I can't say I have.
No. Well, the St. Paul's Queen of the Snows and Minneapolis's Aquitennial Queen tied the ribbon in a symbolic linkage of downtown Minneapolis and downtown St. Paul to their new interstate highway connection. You traveled it. I traveled it often. Interstate 94, right?
Ooh.
Okay, you've got the picture. It's an 11-mile ribbon of concrete that finally, by 1968, made travel time shorter and presumably easier between Minnesota's two largest cities. Well, such things come at a big cost, of course, and this one certainly did, both in terms of money and in terms of human dislocation, pain, and misery. Most of that downside was on the St. Paul end of the I-94 intercity stretch, and most of that was in the capital city's main African-American community. The story, the true story, is powerfully told in a play that opens tonight at History Theater in St. Paul. It's called The Highwaymen. And we have in studio this hour the people who have brought to the stage this too often overlooked aspect of so-called progress. Wow. We'll begin with the artistic director, our good friend, regular guest here on the show, Ron Peluso. Ron, welcome. Nice to see you again, sir.
Always a pleasure, Stan.
That term progress has many connotations, doesn't it? And we see a couple of the permutations on stage here in the story of I-94.
Sure. You know, when I first came to Minnesota in 75, I was stunned that you could actually drive from one downtown to the other downtown in 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I came from Pittsburgh, where everything's a logjam and mm-hmm. rivers and mountains and bridges. And it was amazing. I knew nothing of the history of the highway or any of that at that point.
Most people don't. And that's why this play, The Highwayman, is so very important. It tells a tale that most of us should know, and we don't know. I know it because I was a Cub reporter around that time, and
sure.
It was a big deal. But mostly it was the hoopla, the ribbon tying, the dignitaries. We had a Governor Harold Levander at the time. I think LBJ was in the White House. That's a long time ago, 49 years ago. We drive that stretch many of us every day,
mm-hmm.
and we don't think, when we get into the St. Paul side anyway, we don't think about the human cost
Sure.
That was exactly there.
And if you go to History Theater, I mean, 94 goes right by the what was then the Old Science Museum and that's where right. our home is now, right below the state capitol. And, it, of course, 94 divides the capitol from downtown, which was also part of the controversy.
That's right.
That we still live with.
And we'll talk about in the play itself, The Highwaymen. Again, opening tonight at History Theater in downtown St. Paul. You know, our friend Larry Millette, who's a former newspaper man and has written a lot on architecture mm-hmm. and is a leading force, I think, in preserving our old, beautiful buildings. He has said he's called it the sometimes destructive hand of progress. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting term, isn't it? And it's true. Progress is not always good. Not always. So here we go. We want to talk about this area, this part of St. Paul, that is really at the center of this, well, it's a controversy, all right, and basically, more specifically, the Rondo neighborhood. And to help us with the discussion today, who better than Jamil Jude, who is the director of the Highwaymen, and we have Ron Peluso here, of course. We were hoping to have Josh Wilder, the playwright, and welcome, Jamil. Glad you're here. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on, Stan.
And looking forward to seeing the play, if not tonight, shortly thereafter. Josh Wilder, the playwright, he's... not feeling so great today. Huh?
Yeah, Josh got back in town. He's been away at Yale getting his MFA in playwriting and got back to town and immediately got sick. And it's unfortunate for him, but hopefully he'll feel better in good spirits for the opening of our show tonight.
Well, we share that sentiment. Sick are us. That's our mantra here in Minnesota during the wintertime. And we have a rah-rah. We're going to get this right, aren't we? We're going to get this right. Plusoy, she is the scene designer on this play too, and she's going to be chatting with us a little bit later. Hi, Rara, how are you doing?
Great.
You are great. You're right. You are great, and so is your scenery. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. Okay, the epicenter of this play, The Highwaymen, the true story of the building of I-94 between Minneapolis and St. Paul centers on, well, it's the Rondo neighborhood of St. Paul, is it not, Jamil?
Yeah, absolutely. Rondo, the Rondo community was a self-sustaining African-American and immigrant, highly immigrant community, especially at its heart between 1880 and 1920. I think like many communities in Minnesota and all across the country, the economic depression hit that community very hard. And unlike other communities all across the country, the Rondo community just did not receive the same level of economic support and assistance. So after the Depression, the Rondo community had a really difficult time in trying to pull itself out of that economic downturn. And I think, unfortunately, that also aided in the city's ability to target that community as a potential source for the highway. But, you know, what was once a very thriving, self-sustaining, tightly knit, very social community, a lot of our Pullman porters and people who worked the trains and railways, their job, I mean, they lived inside of that Rondo community. So some of the hardest working African-Americans in the St. Paul neighborhood lived and thrived in the Rondo community before the highway.
And, Jamil, there was true pride in that community, too.
Yeah, you know, and as I listen and I speak with some of the descendants of Rondo to this day, they speak of their community with so much pride. And when you see the photos, you see a community that really supported one another, enjoyed what they brought to the table. And although they had to battle circumstances, I mean, here we are, we're talking about 1940s America, mm-hmm. right? The structures and systems that were in place that were there to prevent them from succeeding, they thrived against those odds, and a testament to the internal strength of the community.
Just to place it geographically, the Rondo neighborhood, again, the center of this story. Ron Peluso mentioned a bit ago that the interstate highway connection cleaved the neighborhood, cut it right in half, mm-hmm. took it out,
yep.
a good part of it there. And so it's near, well, if you know where the Dale Street exit is, coming off I-94, that would either side of the highway, that would have been basically the heart
yep.
along St. Anthony Avenue
absolutely.
There.
That's absolutely. Right. Just south of University, a little north of, I guess, Selby. But, that was the heart of the community from Lexington down to Rice.
A longtime resident, Evelyn Fairbanks, wrote a wonderful mm-hmm. memoir, and I see you shaking your head approvingly.
We actually did a play based on Evelyn Fairbanks' book called The Days of Rondo.
Right.
And so that was my first exposure to Rondo as an outsider, a Pennsylvanian. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I saw that at the History Theater before I was the artistic director there. And it's a beautiful play about this wonderful middle-class family.
Mm-hmm. And Evelyn Fairbanks' story ends in the mid-1950s, just a few years before the Rondo neighborhood was destroyed, just taken off the map, basically, by freeway construction. And in preserving her memories of this distinctive community, Evelyn Fairbanks has added an important dimension to our understanding of Minnesota during those years. She lived there in the 1930s and 1940s, and she recalls it, especially to those arriving from elsewhere in the country, especially from America's South. They saw right away it made up a vibrant, vital community that was, in many ways, she said, independent of the white society around it. Could you tell us, Jamel, what does she mean about that, Jamel?
Well, you know, I think one of the things that that community really prided itself on is that they had everything inside of that community, partly out of need. African Americans at that time weren't able to rent rooms in hotels, so visitors had to find lodging inside of that community. Social clubs, they weren't able to go downtown, either in Minneapolis or in St. Paul, to have parties or to socialize, so they had to have parties inside of their home, so everyone was warm and inviting. That community had to stick together in order to make it through what was an increasingly tense time. Also, here we are, the Great Migration. You mentioned it a little bit. The Great Migration is happening around that same time. So you have African Americans moving from the South, Louisiana, Georgia, Alabama, looking for new opportunities in the North. Many people traveled to Wisconsin and Chicago. But those who moved to Minnesota found their home in their community inside the Rondo neighborhood.
So it was, Jamil, basically an island, a self-contained island within a white sea.
Yes, absolutely.
And it had to be self-sustaining. You know, I knew some of the people who lived there. They're gone now, sadly. But James Griffin, who rose in the ranks of the St. Paul Police Department. Jimmy Griffin, great guy, a friend of mine, I'm proud to say. Steve Maxwell was a dear friend of mine. Mm-hmm. Ramsey County District Judge lived in the community. Richard Parks, he didn't come from here, but he had some trouble where he was growing up in Kansas, some family problems. They booted him out. He came up here to live with relatives in the Rondo neighborhood. Mm. Mr. Parks goes on to become a Life magazine photographer, fashioned, amazing guy, playwright, the whole thing, huh? Mm-hmm. Amazing. And a guy named Frank White, I had on this show about a year ago.
Yeah.
He's written a number of books. They played for the love of the game about black baseball in Minnesota. Wonderful guy. And he, too, Jim, he's one of our guys, too, from up there.
Yeah, right.
Frank was great. He helped us with our play Tomboy Stone, about the first woman to play big league baseball. Tony Stone.
I saw that one too.
From Rondo.
A rich community, wonderful people in it, and all the different economic strata too. But here we have it. But again, getting back to the need for a highway to connect downtown Minneapolis and St. Paul, Ron and Jamil, there really was never any dispute that we did need some sort of a major east-west link between the two major cities. What did we have all those years? You basically had Lake Street going through South Minneapolis, crossing the river, becoming Marshall Avenue, then to the north, University Avenue. And it was stop, start all the way. It took you, 2.5 days to get from one city to the other, it seemed. So never a dispute about a thoroughfare, what was needed. It was where to put it. Jamil?
Yeah, and so we had a railway system prior to the construction of this highway that connected it, but as business trends started to move towards highway construction and the 20s, and people are thinking, having a car, 20s and 30s and 40s, having a car is also a symbol of American freedom and ideals. Right. So the desire for highways and cars and roads just became an increasing demand. As I've been doing some research for the play, realizing that in 1920, the decision for a connective lane, a connective road between Minneapolis and St. Paul was already decided, and they wanted to go through St. Anthony Avenue, which was also a road that was taken out by the highway. So in 1920, we already knew where we wanted to go and how we wanted to do it. In the early 1940s, the decision was approved. In 1947, actually, the highway department approved the decision. Well, unfortunately, the Rondo residents didn't find out until 1953.
Isn't that nice? And the people most affected. Oh, by the way, you're going to be moving.
And I think that's really at the heart of what we want to talk about, that the price of progress has to be paid by somebody. And all across the Federal Highway Act, it seemed like the people who paid the price all looked the same.
Absolutely. And there was a guy, kind of a St. Paul city planner by the name of George Harold. I don't know if that comes up in your research here or in the play. I've not seen the play yet. George Harold.
Mr. Harold is actually one of the main characters.
Aha, thank you very much. Well, he was pushing back, saying, don't run it through the Rondo neighborhood area. No, go about a mile north of University Avenue. There's a railroad line that runs parallel to that place. And he was a man who was 82 years old during the time, right? And
yep.
People, I think, laughed him off as saying, this idealist, this pie-in-the-sky guy, forget about it, even though his idea might make good sense, forget about it. So he was pushed back, wasn't he?
Yeah, you know, he was a retired city planner at the time, and he initially had ideas for a tree-lined parkway that would connect the two cities. So people really built off of his idea. I think later he realized, as they started developing what this moving from a tree-lined parkway to an expressway into a highway system, I think he started realizing, well, what I wanted was something different that actually would increase connections. Mm-hmm. And this looks like it's going to actually build literally a trench in our city. So he advocated for the Northern Route. We talk a little bit more about it in the play, so we have to hold that on some of it.
We don't want to give all the thunder away here.
But the Northern Route would have provided an alternative that would not have destroyed the communities, would have been built along railway lines that were already established, and would have actually kept parts of the city together. Downtown wouldn't have been separated. Church and state would have still been on the same side of a potential highway, which got split up too. But
the Northern Route just made way too much sense, didn't it? You
know? It seemed like it.
Yeah, no good deed. You know that deal. Well, yeah. Here we are talking about The Highwayman, a play debuting tonight at History Theater in downtown St. Paul, the human cost of the Interstate 94 stretch between St. Paul and Minneapolis. We'll continue our discussion in just a minute.
Jaime's Haberdashery presents The Jaime's Oath.
On my honor, I will dress my best, be clean in my speech and actions, live my life honestly, take care of my body for good build and fit, to help keep my country strong by supporting local merchants. Through the words and actions of my haberdasher, I will trust.
So, gentlemen, will you take the Jaime's Oath? Jaime's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street, downtown St. Paul, at jaimes.com.
At the Stan Turner Show, we love good stories, and there's no better place to find them than Valley Bookseller in downtown Stillwater. Valley Bookseller is an independent bookstore with knowledgeable and friendly staff who love books. Tell them what you like to read, and they'll make terrific recommendations just for you. Also, discover one of the finest children's collections in the entire Twin Cities. Valley Bookseller, great books, great people. 217 North Main in Stillwater. Online at valleybookseller.com.
Wolf Beer in the Bottle isn't just any bottled beer. Why? Remove the cork to find out. Hey, you bet. That's a real cork. Now pour. What a great taste. The Strong Golden is a Belgian-style ale featuring local honey from the valley, chamomile, and rose hips. Are you ready to enjoy? Go to wolfbrewing.com. Click on Beer Finder. Then ask for Wolf's, Stillwater's original craft beer. Wolf Brewing Company, Stillwater, Minnesota.
We are back here. Stan Turner with you here. Thank you for your company. Talking about a must-see play that debuts, opens tonight at History Theater in downtown St. Paul. It's called The Highwaymen. This is the world premiere, and it's billed as a searing look at the price of progress, and that's what it is. The Rondo neighborhood of St. Paul was never the same again after this stretch of I-94 came through the city. We're talking about the human cost, the human ramifications of it, with Jamil Jude, who is director of The Highwaymen. We have Ra-Ra Plosoy with us here today. She did the set design here. And Ron Peluso, our artistic director. Ron, we're, what, midway through the 16-17 season now with this one,
we
right?
We are. This is the halfway point.
All right,
and
good.
It's a really powerful play. We previewed the last two nights, and audience members are really incredibly moved by the story. I mean, many people just simply don't know the history of our state, and this is one of those histories that you drive on almost every day
you
come to St. Paul.
You do. Jamil Jude, of course, and as Ron says at the History Theater, these are true stories about true people, real people. Real people involved here. Why don't you, without giving away the whole play and you know, kind of stealing the thunder right here, could you tell us about some of the real-life characters involved here? In fact, some of the people who in the community who pushed back.
Yeah, absolutely. Two of the characters that we represent in the play who have who we really owe as Minnesotans a lot of debt to are Timothy Howard. He was the president of the Rondo St. Anthony Improvement Association, and he was a local businessman in the community. He was a barber, owned a barber shop, but he really advocated for the community to try to mitigate and lessen some of the effects of the potential highway. He was partnered with Pastor Floyd Massey, who at the time was the pastor of Pilgrim Baptist Church, one of the largest African-American churches in that St. Paul community. They worked together to really push back, and they were the community's voice down not only in St. Paul City Hall, but also at the state capitol, really advocating for, hey, you all have to understand the impact of this decision that you're making. Fortunately, their voices were heard, but unfortunately, they weren't able to stop the highway, right? The highway was well underway. Minnesota wanted to be leading in the nation like they had. But these two voices were super big and super big. Never mind.
That's okay. That's all right. In the vernacular today, yes, they were super big.
Yeah, they were big.
Really big back then, we'd call it.
Big,
okay.
Big right. League. But they are represented in the play, and they were the community's advocates.
Who listened to them? Did they have any advocates on the white St. Paul City Council or the State Highway Department at the time?
Well, you know, George Harold listened to them well, especially as he advocated for the Northern Route. I think definitely there was a relationship between those three men, and in the play we try to highlight that as well. Ultimately, George Shepherd, who has a really interesting history as you kind of comb through the books, not only was he one of the people advocating for the highway and its initial placement, as he the mayor at the time wanted to clean up St. Paul and kind of remove some of the, as they viewed it, quote unquote, slums of the community. But George Shepherd also, when listening to the concerns of Pastor Massey and Timothy Howard, saw their plans and said, you know what, we need to listen to this community. They have some great ideas that we need to listen to. So it's really interesting. And I think some of the most fun we've had in the rehearsal hall is that this is a complicated issue. I think it would be a complete failure on our behalf if we were to tell this story and we pointed everyone who was in favor of the highway as a bad person, because they're not. No one was bad. Everyone wanted to do something that was going to put Minnesota on the map and further along, push us towards progress. I think the real debate and what's at the heart of this play is the rationale why. And I think we want to give people with this play, The Highwaymen, an opportunity just to ask those questions on what would we have done differently knowing what we know now.
When was the first shovel full of dirt turned? I mean, figuratively, to start the trench that became I-94 up near the Rondo neighborhood.
Yeah, as I understand it, the construction didn't start until the 60s, right? So the decision, you know, the Federal Aid Highway Act was signed into law in the mid-56, the summer of 56. But shovels weren't put into the ground until the 60s.
Yeah, I'm thinking that today, if this happened, say, within the last 15, 20 years, there would be street demonstrations. There would be pushback. We'd see it on the nightly news every night. There might be boycotts, all kinds of things going on. Was there any such thing then?
Oh, yeah. The community was up in arms. And like I said, the decision was approved in 1947, and the community didn't find out until 1953. It's hard to get a community to respond to things that are happening to them if they're uninformed, if they're not made aware. And the community actually did not find out until they asked about a school that was in need of repairs. They found that the school was going to be demolished. That's actually how the community was informed about the decision for the highway.
Oh, your school, it won't need repairing because we're going to tear it down.
We're going to tear it down.
And then you say, well, what do you mean by that? I said, well, that's going along with countless other houses and structures in the neighborhood because we're putting a freeway through here.
Well, the urban removal program that was really started to be enacted in the 1940s under Mayor Delaney, St. Paul Mayor Delaney, in 1949. Mm-hmm. The urban renewal program really started to what eventually paved the way, pun intended, for this highway, was that they started to use policies like eminent domain to remove people from their homes. And they were, unfortunately, paying members in this community
Householders. We're talking about
households,
residents.
Householders, right? People who moved to this community from to escape Jim Crow, who bought their first homes in Minnesota to start a life. They were being paid below average prices for their home.
Now, eminent domain requires that a fair market price be paid.
Now, it requires, but not back then.
In
the 1970s is when the legislation actually happened to ensure that eminent domain, that you were to be compensated, right? So now if the members of Rondo were to be moved out, they had to be compensated for their businesses and moving expenses, but not in the 1940s.
So they were lowballed. They were lowballed.
And as you listen to members in the community, actually, there have been stories and people have written about it that homes were actually being intentionally destroyed. And no one can identify who was doing the destruction, but people felt like their homes were being intentionally vandalized so that these figures would be justified, and then people having to just accept the money because either you fix your house that was going to be destroyed anyway, or you just take what's given to you. As you start to pull back the layers of it and you listen to some of the firsthand histories of it, it becomes a really ugly story, and you recognize that it's just not a Minnesota story. This happened all across the country, Ohio, North Carolina. Former Secretary of Transportation Fox tells the story of what happened to his grandparents' house in North Carolina, where he's from, Syracuse, New York. The highways have been so good to America in connecting us. But at the same time, some of those effects were disastrous, and it happened to the urban poor and communities of color.
Was it 300 to 400 homes that were taken, destroyed?
In the Rondo
neighborhood itself.
Yes, absolutely.
So African Americans, where are they to go? Where are they to relocate? Now, by that time, I think we, the 1965 Civil Rights Act, that was on the books and declaring segregation, it was against the law, but there was such a thing as de facto segregation.
Yes.
Yeah, and we all, I think, know what that is. It's not embedded in law, but it just happens by social patterns and all the rest. So where do the blacks go? Where can they go when they have to move outside this community?
Well, and unfortunately, right, we in the 1950s is at the same time of what we now understand as white flight, right, which was a suburbanization of our country, people moving from the inner cities out to the suburbs, and a system of redlining happened.
Better explain that for us.
So
thank you.
Redlining was a policy, and we can debate its quote unquote legitimacy, but what the effect of it was. African Americans and other quote unquote undesirable groups, immigrant classes of people, were kept out of certain housing communities. They were denied loans, or they were told when they would try to apply for either purchasing a house or to rent an apartment that vacancies were all of a sudden filled as soon as they showed up. In the 50s and in the 60s, in order for some African Americans to buy homes in certain communities, they had to enlist the help of poor white groups in order to purchase their home for them as underwriters and ghost buyers. So this policy really affected where African Americans in Twin Cities.
You needed a straw buyer to get resettled.
Yeah.
There was an exhibit not so many years ago at the Minnesota History Center, Jamil, and it showed a good part of this, or a bad part of this this highway stretch, and the dislocation, and one black family from the Rondo neighborhood, they moved to Maplewood or Woodbury, I think it was, and they were redlined, and this wonderful gentleman and his family stood up in their own way against this and toughed it out. There were a lot of overt prejudice against them and all the rest, redlining, but they stayed there, and they are still there, and they're making a good go of it, and they kind of broke through, hard to say it, broke through a color line.
Yeah.
Actually, they did. So it took a lot of grit, a lot of determination, a lot of courage to do it.
Yeah, just to borrow from another play, Lorraine Hansberry's Raisin in the Sun, right, tells that story of what it was like for this African-American community family in Chicago who attempted to move into Clybourne Park, another neighborhood in Chicago area, and were tried to and which is kind of autobiographical for Lorraine Hansberry. Her family was that type of family to try to integrate these neighborhoods, and they had to push back against systems of redlining and just an institutional and structural racism, and to try to really live out what we say in our Constitution, right, that all men are created equal.
Absolutely. Well, folks, this is obviously a very, very important play, a very important story. It debuts tonight, unfolds on stage at the History Theater in downtown St. Paul. You're going to want to be there. And it's running through the 26th of this month. And there'll be some special events, in fact, starting tonight and again tomorrow and in the coming weeks. We'll tell you about that down toward the latter part of the hour. We want to talk about the actually the physical set design here, if we could, and the lady who's responsible for it. And oh boy, my ability to pronounce some names that I'm not familiar with are going to really be put on trial here. Pardon me right off the bat here, but Ra Ra Plasoy. How
yes,
close did I come?
You did it spot on.
Oh, the first
very
name,
nice.
The first name Ra Ra, spelled W R A R A, is Japanese.
Yes.
And the last name Plasoy, P L E S O I U.
Indeed.
That's Romanian.
That's Romanian.
When's the last time we met somebody with that combo, huh? That's amazing. Thank you very much for coming down here. We appreciate it, Rara.
It's my pleasure.
So what did you do? Did you put the entire 11 miles of I-94 on the stage?
I built the entire freeway.
The whole freeway's on stage. What a feat. What a feat.
Indeed.
All right. What have you done to portray this?
Well, you know, I started with the play, with Josh's words, and some discussion with Jamil about what parts are necessary and what parts are imagined in order to tell the story. I mean, I'm not working for a museum making a historically accurate diorama of this thing. I'm making an atmosphere in order to convey the feeling that's happening in this show. So, for me, at least, what I got out of this is that there's two sides to this story, at least to this particular one. And like Jamil said, we're not deciding whether one side or the other is the wrong or the right, but I do want to show the contrast, like what you're losing from one community in order to gain in progress in another area. So you'll see two very different locations, or let's say environments, where this story is enacting. And I definitely exaggerate it so that you see physically, what is happening, the removal of people from a neighborhood, all of the character that's disappearing, all of the kind of the history and the light and the community that they had in favor of something that's almost never changing. This other place, the room where they make the decisions, where these three guys decide to kind of annihilate a bunch of people's homes. And that space and what that looks like. And they're very loosely based off of real things. I did take a visit to St. Paul's, the Ramsey Courthouse and the City Hall, and I took a look at the basic things like the architecture and the time period. But also, you know, these are standard rooms across the country. This is what all city planners meet in a little building like this to decide the fate of neighborhoods that they usually typically don't even go see. You know, there's a line in the show that I really stands out to me is like, did you bother to go see the neighborhood that you're about to annihilate? And the truth of the matter is that a lot of people, you know, kind of gloss over it. It's okay when you don't see the other side of it. It's easier to make a decision about it. So for me, I tried to show really obviously what kind of things were lost when that community
just a side note on St. Paul City Hall and Ramsey County Courthouse, same building, Art Deco, built during the Depression.
During the Depression to boost the city's economy, to give them something like hopeful and grand to look for.
And because of depressed prices, they were able to build that building, especially on the inside, with the best woods in the world. It's a showcase.
For
beautiful building inside and out. So they were able to do more than they could have, you know, had there not been a depression. But yes, it stands in contrast to some of the residential neighborhoods, namely Rondo in this case. When you walked the Rondo neighborhood, as I'm sure you did, what were your impressions? There's some pretty grand, this was a so-called gentrified place in St. Paul in the 19th century. This is where some of the swells lived, right?
Yeah.
Right. And then you know, African Americans came in. But as you walked it today or in recent times, what were your impressions?
I thought, you know, in a very unbiased way, the architecture is still very beautiful. Some of those places, I'd say about half of them, are a little bit in disrepair. But I was kind of struck by how beautiful and grand the neighborhood was. Yeah. And it, you know, coming from the Southwest, where we have a lot of we call them cookie cutter homes that all look exactly the same, that have no, you can't tell where your neighbors are because their house looks the same. This is very different. You know, everybody has a character and a style. And old streets, cobblestone, old neighborhood, you know, people know who their neighbors mm-hmm. are. That kind of thing is still there. And when I go so far as I can see the freeway that just like digs this trench in between the two, and I can look across the street and see those people, it's really kind of sad to see that, you know, all of this was lost. And the farthest away, you know, house I can see is like way over there. And and the contrast between this sort of ugly freeway with all the cars, with the walk bridges, which are not the best kind of structure that they could have put up there. It's kind of sad, you know, that we chose to do this and that it still looks like this. You can go there and still see homes that are from that era. And just, you know, I wonder if people notice at all when they drive over the freeways. It makes me think of Phoenix and whether or not I think about it when I'm driving through.
That's one of the important parts, maybe the signal part of this play. Next time you drive through there, there are some people driving there right now listening to us. Mm-hmm. And just think, as you're in that trench going there around Dale Street, that was a vibrant, living, wonderful, closely knit, proud community at one time, Jamil.
Well, you know, Josh, in his dedication page of his play, he says, this play is dedicated to the memories we step on and the lives we drive over. And just to speak, one, to the poetry of Josh in his being.
But he's the playwright.
The playwright, Josh Wilder, the playwright. But also, it really makes me think about it. I have to travel that highway every day just to get to work. And I think sometimes, you know, I'm driving through someone. This is their first home someone ever bought. Someone sunbathed here. Someone brought their first child home from the hospital right now where I'm absentmindedly listen to talk radio, right?
Except this is not. Nobody is absentmindedly
except this
listening.
Radio station. Right
Thank
now,
you
right?
very much.
and it really just it puts things into a perspective that what's the price of progress?
Rob, your greatest challenge in bringing this play and interpreting it in the way of a set. it had to be some anxious moments there trying to figure out what would best convey this neighborhood, this feeling, this story.
I mean, I guess my biggest challenge is that as far as coming from a theatrical design perspective, it's a show about policy. And it really only takes place in two locations. So how do we keep the interest through a 90-minute play visually for something that doesn't have a lot of, you know, bangs and whistles and that kind of thing? It's more of an intellectual drama. So that part I found to be a little bit challenging, and I made choices that I think visually, like, pop or are interesting that you can watch for a period of time and not get bored with. Also, I find the History Theater space to be challenging in a good way. It's a thrust. I am also making use of part of their scenery, part of their stage that they haven't used before.
Oh.
I guess I won't say.
Which part of that? Okay, we can't say.
I guess I won't say right now because it ruins
but
the
But a
surprise.
Car drives right off the stage, up the center aisle, right?
But, you know, it's sometimes it's difficult to design in a building that you've maybe only been to once or sometimes never before. So doing that remotely and kind of working with the History Theater to make their space, the best use of their space possible, was a bit challenging.
Folks, you're going to want to see it. The Highwaymen. Yes, a searing look at the price of progress, the I-94 stretch. The story behind it, the people it dislocated. All the different aspects of this amazing story unfolding for the better part of this month right here. February tonight, February 4th through the 26th, The Highwaymen, a searing look at the price of progress. We'll continue our discussion in a minute. Hello, this is Stan Turner, and I'd like to personally invite you to join me on a tour of Normandy, London, and Paris, September 7th through the 17th. We'll tour some of the most important sites of World War II. We'll enjoy 3 nights in central London, 3 nights in Normandy, before finishing our tour with 3 nights in the City of Light, Paris. Join us on this historic trip to Normandy, London, and Paris. Airfare, transportation, daily breakfast, and dinner are included. However, seating is limited.
To join me, please call Michael at Define Destinations, 651-398-9358. That's 651-398-9358. Or go online to DefinedDestinations.com for a detailed description of the trip and more information. That's Defined Destinations, 651-398-9358, or go online to DefinedDestinations.com.
Jaime's Haberdashery presents The Jaime's Oath.
On my honor, I will dress my best, be clean in my speech and actions, live my life honestly, take care of my body for good build and fit, to help keep my country strong by supporting local merchants. Through the words and actions of my haberdasher, I will trust.
So, gentlemen, will you take the Jaime's Oath? Jaime's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street, downtown St. Paul, at Jaime's.com.
At the Stan Turner Show, we love good stories, and there's no better place to find them than Valley Bookseller in downtown Stillwater. Valley Bookseller is an independent bookstore with knowledgeable and friendly staff who love books. Tell them what you like to read, and they'll make terrific recommendations just for you. Also, discover one of the finest children's collections in the entire Twin Cities. Valley Bookseller, great books, great people. 217 North Main in Stillwater. Online at valleybookseller.com. Please join me, Stan Turner, as we play your requests, share your special dedications, and just have a lot of fun. It's the Wolf Brewing Company All Request and Dedication Show with me, Stan Turner, weekdays, noon to 2, on Club 1220 KLBB. The hour's flying, as it always does here when we have such interesting subjects and people here to tell the stories. The Highwaymen, a play debuting this evening, History Theater, downtown St. Paul. Ron Peluso, Artistic Director. Where, pray tell, do we find the History Theater, and how can we get tickets?
Well, speaking of I-94...
there's a segue.
If you know where the state capitol is, and
I've heard of it.
Look down south from there, and across 94, you'll find the History Theater. 10th Street in downtown St. Paul.
And how about parking, Mr. Peluso?
Well, we've got plenty of parking. Tonight, there's all kind of crazy things going on in downtown St. Paul. But come early to the theater and park where you can around the theater. It's going to be crowded. But our parking ramp is tied to what used to be the west building of the Science Museum. So you can park there on Exchange Street under the Scientology building.
Yes, okay. All right.
And that's actually connected by Skyway to the theater, mm-hmm. So it's actually the best place to park.
It is, indeed. Well, good. There you've got the content. And the telephone number, sir?
It's 651-292-4323.
Jamil Jude, the director of the Highwaymen's, with us right here. Jamil, thank you very much again for coming in.
Yeah, thank you.
You have talked to a lot of people who grew up, some of whom still live in the Rondo neighborhood and environs there in St. Paul, and in putting together this story. And maybe you could tell us about a couple of those people. I think I know some of these folks, too.
Yeah, you know, it's I think this has really been the best part about doing a history theater play is getting an opportunity to interact with the people who live that history. People like Mr. Marvin Anderson, who is a champion of the Rondo community, and along with Mr. Floyd Smaller, are the brain power behind the Rondo Days annual celebration that invites people back to the community and really highlights and celebrates the history of that community. It's what keeps Rondo in the forefront of our minds, but also celebrates and prepares people for the future of Rondo and the Rondo revitalization. I think of people like Debbie Montgomery, who was the first female black female police officer in St. Paul. Women like Naida Presley, who's the executive director of the Aurora St. Anthony Neighborhood Development Corporation and a longtime Rondo resident, Mr. Jim Robinson, Mr. Ron Buford, who's the current executive director of Rondo Avenue, Inc. These men and women have just shared and have been so warm and open with their stories, with their histories. And we only hope with this play that we can present another side to the story that allows them to really talk about the systems that their parents and their grandparents were up against and the work that they have championed in this community. We recognize that this play is just part of the conversation. We want people to come and see this play and learn more about the people who are currently advocating for Rondo and to get involved. There's still so much work to be done in advocating for communities and public policy, how we can hold our officials and our representative governments, how we hold those officials accountable for acting in the best interests of all the citizens, especially those who have been hit the most over the course of our country.
Jamil, I think it'd be good to underscore something you've said a couple of times already. This play is not about grinding a racial axe, about pinpointing bad guys and good guys. It's about what happened to a once proud community, still proud, but cleaved, and how this all came about, bureaucracy and all the rest. There was great pressure in the 1950s because of the advent of federal highway money to build quickly and big. I think the feds were giving 90%. They were giving 90% of the dollars to build these interstates. The locals had to come up with 10%. And you got to do it by such and such a date, or you don't get the federal money, right?
They had 1 year to get the estimates to the federal government.
So time pressure was very much there. And so a lot of people concerns kind of got blown by the wayside there in the course of trying to get this done.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Again, the play is not to try to start a racial fatwa, or maybe that's even mixing things. But the opportunity that we are trying to present with the play is just to have a conversation on the structures that have been in place that lead to specific decisions that then disenfranchise specific communities. And then if we can take a look at it, analyze it now using our contemporary understanding, how will we want to build a future that's more inclusive, more equitable, all the things that we recognize are important? How can we do that by analyzing what we've done in the past?
A couple of reporters, two guys I've known over the years, who are newspaper reporters, took a look at kind of the lighter side of I-94 opening between St. Paul and Minneapolis that December day in 1968. If I could read just a couple of pieces from what they wrote. Minneapolis Tribune columnist Robert T. Smith, oh, he was a legend, he noted that the rivalry between Minneapolis and St. Paul was about to end. He said that Smith wrote, "With more than a little tongue-in-cheek, he said, one thing I-94 will eliminate is that delightful 3-day trip to St. Paul and back via University Avenue." Smith wrote, "No more joy in playing pass the truck. No more in that total feeling of frustration and exhaustion after those hours at the wheel. How many times have you gotten to Montgomery Ward and just give it up? No more of that delicious sensation of defeat," wrote Robert T. Smith on the opening of the... And my friend Robert Werrett, Bob Werrett, who was then of the St. Paul Pioneer Press, went on to the Minneapolis Star. Bob wrote he aimed a few humorous jabs of his own at I-94 when he wrote about the imminent opening of the new freeway link. He wrote, Werrett, "Monday afternoon, an $80 million concrete trail with a bewildering series of interchanges will open to drivers willing to risk travel between St. Paul and Minneapolis. The I-94 loop-to-loop link," he writes, "constructed on the proposition that people in one city really do wish to visit people in the other, has no less than 18 interchanges. At some of the interchanges, you can get on and off. At others, you may be able to get off while traveling west, but you cannot go on and go west. At others, you can get off while traveling west, but on only if you choose to go east. The entire thing is baffling to the point where the State Highway Department's public information is not quite sure of anything except that with great ceremony, the long-awaited roadway will open," as it did on December 9th, 2:15 in the afternoon, 1968. Okay. Gone from some of these commentaries, any of the human cost here, too. But some people were able to find some lightness. And I remember the tenor of the time was, wow, this will be great. You know, it's going to cut so much time and you know, hassle getting between Minneapolis and St. Paul.
And, I mean, it was an economic driver, too, right?
Sure. Absolutely.
Jobs were on the line. People were going to be given jobs and opportunities to help build the highway. And the Rondo community was also sold that same bill of goods, that this highway is going to be an economic driver. And some of the residents of your community will have an opportunity to be part of this highway. I couldn't imagine how conflicting that must be to have a job to work on the highway, especially if it was where your home used to stand.
Isn't that something, the utter irony, huh? Ron Peluso, there are a lot of events attached to the opening of this play, The Highwaymen. Maybe you can tell us about, I think, starting tonight, actually, opening night.
Well, there's all kind of pre-show events. There's a beer tasting and wine tasting.
You say a beer tasting.
There is a beer tasting. You know, people love that, and they may not even come to see the show, but just come.
You can bring your wine into the theater, too, can't you?
You actually can.
I actually have done that. Soda pop.
Have a good time. So okay. There's all that going on. And then there's a handful of organizations tonight who will be representing the community and transportation and all of that. So come find out about our history and have a good time.
Okay. In subsequent weeks here now, you should tell us about some of the people who are going to be available to visit with theatergoers.
Well, immediately following opening night, Jamil and Josh, our playwright and cast, will talk with you after the show.
Okay.
And
then that's a good deal.
Marvin Anderson will join us on the 12th, and then the cast comes back on the 19th, and then Frank White of that we mentioned earlier in the show will be speaking the last day.
And a highway commissioner, too?
Is there a highway commissioner in there, too?
Let's not forget that. I mean,
There's all kind of important people showing up.
Yeah, we've been actually really really thankful for Minnesota Department of Transportation and their partnership with us. I think MnDOT recognizes the history of their department and the frustrations people have had with their with what they've done over the years, and they are trying to do things differently. We've worked specifically with Marcel Walker and the rest of the MnDOT team in the work that they've done in Rondo to create rehab the walking bridges. So MnDOT has been a part of this, and they've been a really great partner.
Yeah, that's great. I noticed when they routed the I-94, so-called Spaghetti Junction near downtown St. Paul, they were able to save some churches down there. Central Presbyterian, next door, the little French church, King Louis, King of France, St. Mary's Catholic Church, not too far away. That's why we have the Spaghetti Junction. It was rooted through there, snaked its way around these churches to save them. I think only one church, only, quote-unquote, was lost to that construction. There were many aspects to it.
Absolutely. And doing some research, just the Merriam Park neighborhood, because the Catholic churches owned schools and businesses around that area, they actually got the interchange pushed up to Creighton and Vandalia as opposed to where it was initially planned.
That's a good thing.
So the churches could maintain their property. The story of this highway is all about people with influence exercising their influence to get things done.
Yeah, absolutely. Amen. Ron Peluso, we should hear in the closing minutes talk about the rest of the season here. This has been another stellar season at History Theater. Opened with Bobby V, Teen Idol. That was a smash.
Yeah,
I think you added a couple of extra performances. And our friend, my friend, your friend, Bobby V, passed away during the run of this. But it was a huge success. His story needed to be told, and it was. Just recently, Orphan Train.
Yep, back for its fifth time, another sellout show. So.
Yeah.
And then following this, we have The Paper Dreams of Harry Chin by Jessica Wong, and it's a story about the Chinese Immigration Act, immigration part of our history, of course.
And, okay.
And the German immigrant story, Sweetland, based on the movie that's coming up.
Ach du lieber.
And of course, as the clock is ticking, we know we will bring back Glenn Sheen this summer.
Ah, boy. Talk about a crowd pleaser, that one, huh? Okay, excellent.
Stay tuned.
Good to hear that. Closing words here from Jamil Jude, the director of Highwaymen. Just a couple words. We're just about out of time, sir.
Well, I just want to thank everybody in the History Theater for helping us bring this story, and thank you to the Rondo residents for letting us tell it. We hope that people take this opportunity to really ask themselves questions on what type of community and society do we want to have moving forward, and who do we want to help us make decisions to build an equitable society.
Thank you. Well said. Beautifully said. Thank you so much. Folks, get down and see it. The Highwaymen opening tonight, History Theater, downtown St. Paul. Stan Turner here. Have a great weekend. Please catch us on the All Request and Dedication Music Show come Monday right after the news at noon. Jesse, thanks to you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Bye-bye.
This is where your music and memories live. Club 1220.
KLBB.
Stillwater, Minneapolis, St. Paul.